Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez, Connell the intern on this Friday, December 8, 2017. Time for the Border Patrol Blitz and Fast Break. Let's start off with Gabe DeArmond.
Missouri.
PowerMizzou.com in the house. What's up, Gabe? How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How about you?
Oh, doing great. All right, Gabe, let's start with Josh Heupel going to Central Florida. UCF, it looks like it's a tremendous job that he's going to walk into a situation where there's a lot of talent, a good chance to succeed right away. But what was your reaction when you first heard that Heupel would be the new head coach at UCF?
I was really surprised. I'd seen that UCF was going to name a head coach, later that morning on Tuesday, and I thought, okay, I'm going to cruise around and just make sure that Heupel's name hasn't been tied to this anywhere. I couldn't find anything. I mean, nobody mentioned him as a candidate down there. I can tell you that nobody at Missouri really knew until shortly before it happened. It was a surprise to everybody, but like you said, great job. I mean, nobody could argue that that's not a job he should have taken. I think it's probably the best non-Power 5 job in the country, and it's better than a lot of Power 5 jobs.
So you're saying that the UCF coaching search was handled differently than Tennessee's?
Yes, those in Knoxville could learn a lesson or two from Danny White at UCF.
Okay, so Josh Heupel is going to be the next head coach at UCF. Will he be the offensive coordinator for the Texas Bowl for Missouri?
I'd be awfully surprised. I mean, there has been nothing official from Missouri. But just given kind of the reaction I've seen both publicly and I've gotten from other people just about the way he left, the fact that really nobody knew about it, knew it was a possibility or knew it was happening until, I mean, players found out on social media, which I don't think is a terrible thing. It happens in this day and age, because the problem is if he tells Missouri's players, hey, I'm taking this job an hour before the press conference, well, all it takes is one of them to tweet or one of them to tell a friend who tells a reporter, and then, you know, it's out and UCF gets angry. So I understand that part of it, but he's on the road recruiting for Central Florida. He's got a job to do. I'd be very surprised if he's coaching for Missouri.
Who would be the offensive coordinator then for Missouri for the bowl game?
I would think for the bowl game it'll be Joe John Finley. If Missouri hires internally, I think that's the guy that gets the job. He's the tight ends coach right now. He is, you know, he's a young guy. He's only got a couple years as a full-time assistant, but he was very involved in bringing Missouri's offense here. Heupel obviously gets all the credit, but a lot of these concepts came from Baylor, where Finley was, you know, before he came to Mizzou. So I think if they go internally, which honestly at this point I don't think they will, but if they do, I think it's Finley.
Give me a couple of names that you think are on the short list to become the next offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously pretty difficult to judge. I don't think a lot of us have spent a lot of time on that in the last couple of days, because the coaching staff, including obviously Odom, have been on the road recruiting, and I don't think this has been their main focus. But, you know, the guy that I've kind of found that I think would be a really good hire is Graham Harrell. He's at North Texas.
Yes.
He was a Texas Tech quarterback 10 years ago. He basically was Drew Locke 10 years ago. You know, so, and he runs a pretty similar offense. I like that a lot. Hugh Freeze's name is going to come up, no question about it. I understand all the objections to it. I also understand the other side, which would say, look, he wasn't really found guilty of major, like, it was failure to monitor, but he was not given a show cause. He was not, any of the super serious things, lack of institutional control wasn't on him. If Ole Miss got it, I can't even remember. But, you know, somebody's going to hire Hugh Freeze as an offensive coordinator this year. I don't know that it'll be Missouri, but I think it's something that's at least going to be looked at.
What type of impact does Heupel's departure have on Drew Locke's decision of whether or not to go pro?
Yeah, my initial reaction was that it would push Drew closer to the NFL, but I've been told by multiple people this week that's not the case. It really doesn't have an impact at all. If Drew goes pro, it's because his draft grade said he should go pro. you know, not because Josh Heupel left.
What's your gut tell you about that decision?
Boy, I don't know. I think he's coming back. I was more confident in it a week or two ago. Because the thing about it, the guy that he keeps getting compared to is Patrick Mahomes. And last in that, not necessarily the player, you know, Mahomes is a better athlete, but they do have somewhat similar games. But a year ago at this time, nobody had Patrick Mahomes as a first rounder. And the thing about the NFL draft, the closer you get every single day, quarterbacks creep up the board because people panic at quarterback. And guys that should go 10 go 1. And guys that should go 30 go 10. You know, so I really don't know. I think the biggest thing factoring in Missouri's favor is how many quarterbacks there are that at least as of today are ahead of Drew Lock. You know, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, if he comes out, probably Josh Allen at Wyoming, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson. I mean, six first-round quarterbacks seems really unlikely to me. So I think that helps. And then just the pull of, hey, create an actual legacy here rather than just being a guy that came through and had one good season.
And that's what Terry Beckner Jr. has decided. He wants to come back. The legacy is important to him, and so we'll see if that impacts Drew Lock's decision. Now, basketball, we saw Mizzou win over Miami, Ohio this week at home. They have Green Bay on Saturday night. But it's been interesting to watch after they win at UCF. UCF wins at Alabama. Tonight, Mizzou fans should certainly be rooting for St. John's as they play Arizona State at Staples Center tonight. That would be nice for Mizzou's resume if St. John's could get the win. Iowa State, even though Iowa's not very good, Iowa State beat Iowa last night, so Iowa State looks like they're improving. Right now, as we head into this game against Green Bay, what is your opinion of Mizzou's body of work so far that you've seen?
I mean, it's solid. You know, obviously hanging on to win the, if they'd won that West Virginia game, they'd be in the top 25 right now. I have very little doubt, but they're in a stretch of four games that they should win them all leading up to bragging rights. And really, Illinois is not very good either. I think this team should finish the non-conference 11-2, which would be, you know, preseason. I think most people said 10-3, 11-2 would be really good. So they've done what they needed to do. Obviously didn't look good at Utah. Blew the one late against West Virginia, but St. John's is a solid team, maybe a tournament team. UCF is getting better, so they've got some good wins. They've got some neutral and road wins. And, you know, they ought to, in the next 2 weeks, put themselves in a position to enter SEC play and look at it and say, we've got a very realistic shot of being a tournament team.
I assume no surprise that C.J. Roberts has announced he's going to transfer. He was a Kim Anderson recruit, but then he stayed on, and then he was redshirted, but he wants to play, and so no surprise there, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you redshirt in college basketball, like, the writing's kind of on the wall. Hey, this probably isn't going to be the place that I get a whole lot of playing time, unless it's for health reasons, which obviously it wasn't for C.J. So, you know, it's pretty interesting. He was kind of viewed as like the crown jewel of Kim Anderson's recruiting, and now he's transferring out after a semester because he's not going to get on the floor here. But no surprise. From everything I've seen, the family, you know, handled it in a classy manner. Just the kid wants to go play somewhere.
Nate wants a Michael Porter Jr. update.
He was on the bench, guys, and he wore a white Mizzou polo.
Aha!
Wow.
Aha!
I mean, that is.
Yeah, what's that mean? Come on.
Miss Lippy's car
right.
is
I mean,
green.
It means he's not, like, done, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a good sign in that it shows he's still engaged with the team. But, you know, I don't want to get into speculating about timelines and if he'll play or not. I mean, that remains to be seen. I think probably about February 1st is the date where you go, okay, if he's not back by now, it looks pretty unlikely. But I also think Missouri playing well helps that. I mean, you know, if you're sitting in mid-January and Missouri's like 9-9, there's not much point to come back to that team for him. But if you get into mid-January and Missouri's 15-4, you know, and looking like they can do some things and looking like, hey, this is a tournament team, and you add a preseason All-American, and all of a sudden they become a tournament team that can do something. I think that impacts the thought process.
Gabe DeArmond, thank you so much for the time. We will talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Sounds good.
That is a Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. Now let's say hello to Stan Weber.
Kansas State.
Hello, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Good morning to you as well. Let's start with the same question, basically, that I had for Gabe DeArmond. What was your reaction when you found out that K-State's offensive coordinator was leaving for another job to be the head coach at UTEP? Dana Dimmel is headed south. Your reaction?
I was surprised at first. Obviously, he had been a coach with Bill Snyder for a long time. He was a GA when Bill Snyder came here in 1989, was the first guy to walk in and say, "Hey, you consider to allow me to stay on with your program." But he went off and was a head coach at Wyoming, was successfully the head coach there for a few years, then went to Houston, and things didn't go quite as well. Then got into the assistant coaching world for a little bit until Bill Snyder came back for his second tenure, and then Dana Dimmel came over at that point. So Bill Snyder doesn't have a lot of turnover in his staff, so anytime you see movement, it has to surprise you. And I'm happy for Dana that he gets a chance to be a head coach again. He's been in that position before, so I think it's going to be exciting for him to be able to control his own destiny. And, you know, Coach Snyder, the big question is he going to be back? Is he going to be back for 2 years, 3 years? Is he going to retire? All those kind of questions are floating around. And Dana Dimmel at 55 years old, it's nice that he's been given the opportunity to say, okay, I know what I'm going to do. Let's go try to build this program, you know, the worst in the country right now at UTEP. But when they're the worst, you could say it's an awful job. I would say, boy, when he applies the Bill Snyder philosophy, they can bounce back fast. Because when you start down as low as they are, the basics are so important that they can get themselves right up to bowl eligibility in a fast order.
So how do they handle the offensive coordinator situation going forward?
Well, Bill Snyder is very methodical in the things he does. I think they've got a great opportunity to have Colin Klein be the offensive coordinator. That doesn't have to be the way they go, but Colin Klein actually went up and was the offensive coordinator for Northern Iowa, when he was an assistant 1 year. He was a GA at K-State for a little while. Then he went to UNI, and they moved him up to calling the plays at UNI, and then he came back to K-State. So he knows the system very well. He's a quarterback, and hey, he's our Scott Frost. I mean, Nebraska, when you watch Scott Frost go around to Oregon and then Central Florida, and then you wished he came back home, well, Colin Klein is a lot like that, and he's a little younger and needs to go through the cycle. But if K-State's able to keep him around while he's going through that learning process before he heads toward hopefully being a head coach, hopefully at K-State someday, it'd be nice. So I think K-State's offense is intact. Bill Snyder is so involved. He's the best offensive coordinator in the country the last 25 or 30 years. I mean, he does a fantastic job. So you have him as a resource to always play off of. And those guys know the system. There's been very little turnover. They know what the strategy is. So I think Colin Klein would do a great job.
All right, Stan, let's get to basketball. Right now, K-State 8-1. Their only loss, a 2-point loss to Arizona State. Arizona State looks really, really good. They're undefeated. They play St. John's tonight and then Kansas on Sunday. So we'll see how this weekend plays out for them. But Kansas State will host Tulsa on Saturday night. Tulsa, not as good as they have been in the past, but still Tulsa, not a bad basketball program. And so after the win at Vanderbilt, we haven't talked since that road win. Anytime you can get a true road win in the non-con, it's a big plus. So you tell me what you think so far after nine games of this K-State Wildcat basketball team.
Well, it's generally positive they've done. The kids are really working together, trying to do the right thing, and that makes a big difference. You got three players who have been starters, just being their third year of juniors, and Xavier Sneed's upped his game. He's legitimately, consistently playing at a high level. So you can count on four guys. K-State's still trying to find out how do they clear the boards on a defensive end. If you want to look at a negative, that's what they need to do better. But otherwise, they're doing a lot of things well, especially on the offensive end, and playing much better. Kamau Stokes almost hitting 50% of his three-point shots, cleaning up his game, not turning it over. There are a lot of positives. I thought in Vegas that they really were playing at a high level when they went out and played against Arizona State. But Arizona State just shot the lights out. I mean, deep three-point shots, and it was crazy how well Arizona State played that day and beat K-State. We didn't know at that point that Arizona State was that good, but the next night I watched them take apart Xavier and pound them in the second half when Xavier was ranked 15th in the country at the time. So a little more respect for K-State at that time. So I say, you know, generally thumbs up, but now I advance it to a little bit higher level. I feel more confident about this K-State basketball team after the trip to Nashville, because K-State came out on the road and played very good basketball. And then in the second half, for some reason, it's not a big crowd, but for some reason, the crowd really got into the game and started forcing the energy level to increase, and Vanderbilt made a big push. They were behind by 13 points in the half. They made a big push, were all over K-State, everything going their way, tied the game up, get to the last couple minutes of the game, and then K-State separated. Really won the game at the end, which is what they didn't do against Arizona State, and you can argue didn't do enough last year to be a higher-level NCAA tournament team. But to see those guys do that, come back and win the game, they hit 22 of 24 free throws, many of them clutch free throws in the last 2 minutes of the game, and won that game. And then I think something happened. I believe, we'll see, this game in Wichita, this game's going to be in Wichita against Tulsa, a pretty good team that, if you want to have a reference point, lost by two to Iowa State. So you're watching, you know, Iowa State's a reference point we have around here very well because Mizzou played them to beat Iowa. This Tulsa team isn't a great basketball team, but they only lost by two to Iowa State. So they're going to be a formidable opponent. If you mess around, you could lose the game. But K-State, when they came back after that Vanderbilt game, I saw just a little different confidence. And we'll see if that holds. If they play well against Tulsa, I think they may have advanced their game. They have to believe in themselves. They need to know that they can make winning plays, and they're ready to play at the highest level. And I think for the first time that these three juniors and Xavier Sneed and this basketball team, they have a confidence level about how good they are, and it started with that win at Vanderbilt. Probably was helpful that they kind of allowed Vanderbilt to get back in the game and went and won it at the end. We'll see if it holds. They got to play well against Tulsa because then they got finals. You got to take a whole week off before you get right back into it. But before the month ends, they're going to be starting conference play on the road against Iowa State. What a big game that will be for K-State before the year end. But I feel good about the K-State basketball team and much better after the Vanderbilt win.
Yeah, I was going to say, Stan, in a weird way, I think it's almost a good thing that they had the big lead, but that they, I don't want to say blew it, but that it became a close game. It maybe tells you more about your team if you go and hold on the road and win a close game, because you and I talked about that last week, right? That's been one of their questions. Now they made their free throws. They took care of things down the stretch. That should give them confidence because they're going to be in a lot of close games when they get into Big 12 play.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you would never script it that way. Okay,
right.
They played so awesome in the first half. They're just punching Vanderbilt all over the court, and you go, wow, this is unbelievable. And K-State ended up hitting 58% of their shots on the road. So, you know, their offensive efficiency has been very high this year. And even their bigs, you may say, well, who's he going to rely on? It's going to be a group of two to four guys playing the position. But offensively, those guys are doing fine. It's on the defensive end, having that enforcer and rebounding that K-State has a struggle. But at the end of the day, I think you're right, Nate, to say, they don't remember the early lead. They definitely don't remember a collapse or a run or whatever you want to call it that Vanderbilt created. But the last 2 minutes, I think that is in bold in front of their eyes, that they just went out and outplayed Vanderbilt every step of the way during the last 2 minutes. It wasn't shaky at all. Every time they walked to the line, it was rip, rip. The defense, they were locking down. They were playing their best basketball in the last 2 minutes, and they needed it, because Vanderbilt was on a heck of a run at the time. So I do, at the end of the day, think that actually helps, giving them confidence in what they can do on the road. And Arizona State, with the confirmation that they won at Vanderbilt, what Arizona State's doing, I think in the back of the mind, is not only helping K-State's RPI, which is a mathematical formula that's so important when you get to the NCAA tournament, but I think the players may be taking note that we really shouldn't have lost to Arizona State. I mean, you just go down the list and look at the mistakes K-State made, and they could really say, come on, we should have won that game, and we're watching Arizona State play at a very high level. So that may give them a little bit of confidence as well. But I always say in athletics, you confirm their athletes should do what the coaches are telling them only by executing and winning. And I don't want to make too big a deal about beating Vanderbilt on the road. But, guys, I have no agenda here. When I came back and watched them play USC Upstate, who? USC Upstate. Shouldn't matter. But the way they played, the way they had a purpose, the confidence they had was different, because I saw them play ORU the week before and just lay around and win the game by 10. You know, just, yeah, whatever, we know we're going to win. That's easy to do. That's not what the good teams do. And I thought, hey, I see a little carryover. I see something that was in Nashville came back home. Now let's see. It takes more than just one game. Let's see if they do it against Tulsa. Watch that game closely if you want to monitor K-State basketball. Because I think if they do it for the third game in a row, we may just have seen them reach a new realm. And maybe it's too much of K-State football. I've seen it happen so many times. But it does happen. You kind of bounce yourself up and just forget what you were and move up with college athletics. And K-State may be on the verge of doing that.
Stan, thank you very much for the time. Say hello to Frank Haith for me.
Your boy Frank Haith. Can you believe it's already his fourth year at Tulsa?
Wow. Yes, because I feel like the Kim Anderson era was three decades long. So, yes, it does feel like 4 years.
You don't have to worry
thank
about
you.
That anymore.
No, Steve. I don't,
it's all
Stan.
About the Chiefs now, man. Just
what?
Worry about the Chiefs.
No, that makes me feel better. Thanks a lot, Stan. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, take care, guys.
Stan Weber is the man. Now we move on to Jesse Newell.
Kansas.
Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Jesse, good morning. How are you?
Good, team. How about yourself?
Doing very well. Did you take Bill Self's advice and go have a drink at Power and Light after leaving the game at Sprint Center?
No, I didn't. It was a little bit too late for me, especially with the drive home. I would have made it even later night. But, no, that was a funny quote. Bill Self seems to sometimes do that just to kind of maybe cheer himself up, give a nice quotable quote there at the press conference so that every writer can lead their story with it, but that definitely was not a good performance by the Jayhawks.
No, it made me laugh out loud. So is this just, you chalk it up to, hey, they played Syracuse, and, Mike Hopkins did a good job of studying that game and figuring out what they did well against Syracuse, and you're not going to have these back-to-back games against teams that play that kind of zone really ever. They didn't think this was going to happen when they scheduled this game because Hopkins obviously wasn't the coach. Was it just those circumstances that led to the poor performance, or are there real reasons to worry about what we saw at Sprint Center?
Well, I think you take a little bit of both, and I think the thing that comes into my mind immediately is even if, Mike Hopkins, which I wrote about this, I talked to him after the game, kind of grabbing him off by himself, and he talked about the game plan they had and talking to Syracuse's coaches and what they wanted to do against Kansas and executing it perfectly. But, you think back to me, I was 2012-2013 in that loss when Bill Self had the famous quote to TCU about James Naismith and they'd never had a worse team on the court. If I remember correctly, and I'm pretty sure I do, that KU was a 19-point favorite in that game and KU was a 22-point favorite against Washington. So if that kind of gives you any perspective on kind of how big this upset was, that this is most likely more of an upset than even that one was. And that one even got a better Bill Self quote on the road when TCU was not playing so well. So I think for Kansas, you're right with the defense. That what they faced on that is so weird, I don't think it'll happen again. And I just don't think that many teams, most teams, your coaches, you do what you do. Bill Self, he plays man-to-man defense. He's not going to go 2-3 zoned against somebody just because some team is bad against a 2-3 zone. You have your own identity. And so for Mike Hopkins to have this defense as his identity immediately after KU played Syracuse, I mean, that was a positive for them. And then the way they extended it to basically not guard LeGerald Vick, I just think it's a one-time deal because right now you have to know that KU's coaches immediately went back yesterday and said, okay, next time this happens, how are we going to attack this? We're gonna switch LeGerald Vick and Devontae Graham and let Devontae Graham throw the lobs or shoot the ball inside at the high post part. Or, here's a set play you can run. I mean, Kansas is ready for some other team to do this to them because Washington's had success. I think the bigger issue is defensively where Washington got too many open threes. They used KU's depth against it because KU was trying to double team to avoid foul trouble and they were able to get open shots on the perimeter. And KU, when in foul trouble, does not have as good of a defense because their big men are they aren't as aggressive. You saw Udoka Azubuike in the second half allow a couple dunks, a couple layups, and he was not attacking players defensively because he was scared about picking up his third foul. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think you take some definite negative things away from that game, but at the same time, I don't think KU's offense will be held down like that again with that sort of defense just because it was so funky, and I think KU will be ready the next time it happens.
That is, though, why I think KU fans are so anxious to hear if anything's going to happen with Billy Preston or if, Silvio D'Souza or both are going to be ever available to this team. Because, look, even if they're not, playing at the level that Bill Self wants them to play at, you can't deny the physical difference between a guy with the ability and size of Billy Preston and all due respect to Clay Young, but a 6'5" walk-on. So Any update? Do we have any indication as to what will happen with those two guys?
You know, not yet. With Billy Preston, you keep thinking it's coming very soon, and that there's some sort of resolution. Even if it's not like, hey, he's going to play next game, it's like, oh, hey, you know, KU's compliance department has sent their report to the NCAA and is awaiting word on whether what they think the punishment or if it's too severe, what the case may be. And then Sylvia D'Souza just took his standardized test last Saturday. So as we know with the ACT, SAT from all taking that, it takes a little while to get results from that and figure out if that's going to happen. But I think you're right, Nate, a couple things. You know, I talked with Mike Hopkins when, you know, they kind of had the perfect lineup that their Noah Robinson guy inside. He threw a bunch of fouls, and whenever he got, you know, a double team, he felt it and could pass it outside, get open shots. And I talked to Mike Hopkins, and he said, yeah, we knew that they're thin, so they're going to double team the post. And because they're trying to avoid fouls there, they're going to leave some stuff open on the perimeter. So you see teams trying to scheme against KU in that way. And the other thing we're not really talking about as much, but just having another body in the rotation, when you're playing small ball, the way KU has succeeded so far is just playing with immense energy. You know, that they get up the floor, they force steals, they get out in transition, you know, that they get up in people's faces when they guard. I mean, it's a little bit different from built-up teams of the past, but they've been really aggressive. Now, the question is, how aggressive can you be when, look, Devontae Graham's played 40 minutes the last two games. But Gerald Dick and Sue Mikhailuk have averaged 38 minutes per game the last two games. I mean, this is not the end of the season here. This is the beginning of the season. And so one more big body, it's not only going to help them in the post when, okay, you got another body to give fouls there. It's going to help them because you can shuffle some guys around, and Devontae Graham can play 37 minutes instead of 40. And LaGeralda can play 34 minutes instead of 38. And so right now I think it's a depth issue not only in the front court, but their lack of depth there is hurting them in the back court as well. And I don't think these guys can play with great energy over the course of the next 4 months. They continue playing the minutes they have to play right now.
All right, speaking of energy, the next matchup for the Jayhawks is a good one. It's an undefeated and top 25 ranked Arizona State team, but Arizona State plays against St. John's tonight in Los Angeles, and then 2 days later they come to Allen Fieldhouse and play on Sunday. What kind of energy will Arizona State have for this game, and what do you expect overall from the matchup?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a really weird thing to do, especially if you're Arizona State, knowing how big that KU matchup is going to be. And trust me, I know these fans are ready for this because I was the only AP poll voter that did not rank Arizona State this week. So there's lots of people that are ready to have Arizona State play Kansas so that I could get a good look at the Sun Devils to see if they deserve to be ranked or not. But, you know, if you look at them just up and down the line, I mean, great offense, one of the best offenses in the nation. They also can draw a bunch of fouls, which could give KU problems. Maybe not as much in Allen Fieldhouse, but still something that to watch. Can shoot threes, can shoot inside. The biggest question right now for them is just defensively, and can they do anything against Kansas? And, you know, a little bit similar to what Washington coming into that game was, which is they give up a ton of three-point shots. And if you look at KU's schedule, yeah, I don't really know how to take this right now because it's just the sample size is not big enough to kind of know what we're looking at and what we're not looking at. But if you look at the three Power 5 schools KU's played against, they haven't scored as well against those teams, which is Washington, Kentucky. And, you know, and the thing about that is, if you look, okay, is it that? Is that what happened? Did they not score as well, Washington, Kentucky, and Syracuse, because they're Power 5 teams? Or did they not score as well because those are the three games that KU's played away from Allen Fieldhouse? You know, KU's just shot so amazingly well at Allen Fieldhouse. Every single game they played there, it's been a blowout. So I don't know right now if that Arizona State game means, okay, KU's going to struggle because it's a Power 5 opponent, or KU's going to just be amazing because it's Allen Fieldhouse. But I do like the Jayhawks by double digits in this one just because this is going to be up and down, fast pace, and I think if KU can open itself up for some threes, which didn't happen against Washington, they should be in good shape, especially in the home court, and a bunch of fans that are going to be ready to get a sour taste out of them now.
Jesse, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
That's Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. That is your Border Patrol Fast Break and Blitz. Take a deep breath. We're almost done, people. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.